to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Culture Hall, and it's episode number 284, where we talk to Janalee Tobias, a what some might call a gun enthusiast. And also mother of Sister Tobias. So let me take everyone who is a new listener down this road a little bit. About how long ago has it been since she served?
Probably about 4 years.
So when Sister Tobias left on her mission, I said, hey, we would love to follow Sister Tobias, your daughter, as she is on her mission. So we took her letters back home to the family, and we shared them via theculturalhall.com. You can actually still find those letters there. And so it was a fun sort of thing. And now you're here. We're going to talk a little bit about gun control, but I think that that's probably thrust to the forefront because you were featured in the show that is on Showtime. Mm-hmm. It's called Who is America? And it's Sacha Baron Cohen. And you, as the Deseret News article claims, were duped. So I want to talk, I want to start there, and then maybe we'll kind of pick up all the pieces around it.
Okay.
So how is it that something... or someone like that comes to find you and then talks to you?
Well, I don't know because I'm so privileged, I guess, or honored. Some people might not think it's a very good list to be on, but Sarah Palin, Dick Cheney, former vice president, I should say, Dick Cheney, Judge Roy Moore, The Bachelor, several high-profile Republican legislators, and little old me. So,
but not little old you. You're quite the activist in several circles, right?
Yes, I am. I guess I say that since I'm a gun rights activist, I like to say that a mom with a mouth is more powerful than a mom with a magnum. And I would say that for anybody, a man with a magnum, a female, anybody with a mouth. That's why Shakespeare said it first, that the sword, the pen is more mightier than the sword. So I think it must, I'm sure that it's my gun rights activism that attracted the attention of Sacha Baron Cohen, who I had no idea who he was. I remember hearing briefly about him about 10 years, and I researched him a little bit 10 years ago, and I thought, this guy's a jerk. Like, he makes fun of people, and he destroys their life, and he has them do stupid stuff, like gross stuff. And so I haven't thought about him in 10 years. And so you want me to just tell you how I ended up
I want to get into you being duped, but maybe before we go there, you talk about being a gun enthusiast. So wrap that in a box for people. What does that mean? Because I mean, I think that guns in certain scenarios are necessary, but I don't know that I would call myself a gun enthusiast by that. So what, you know, or gun activist? Give me a definition of yourself in that perspective.
Okay, sure. Really, how I got into being a gun rights activist, it was over 25 years ago, maybe now, and I had two young girls, Sister Tobias being one of those young toddlers.
And the other Sister Tobias.
So the gun debate, maybe you were, you're so young, Richie, maybe you were in diapers still,
oh,
I don't know.
Stop. You're nice.
And, then you must remember when they were having the debate about the Brady Bill. And Mayor Dede Cordini was mayor of Salt Lake City, and she wanted to start having stricter gun control laws and background checks. And so I started studying the laws, and I thought when you're a female, you kind of have this sisterhood thing, like being, oh, they have my back, you know, they're my sister, and they want to keep us safe, and so they're high profile, and so I wanted to believe them, because at that time it was Dede Cordini, the mayor of Salt Lake City, and Attorney General Jan Graham, being a female, she was calling for more gun control, and Representative Karen Shepard, who was a female, calling for more gun control on a national, so that's a local and state level, women calling for more gun control. And on a national level, it was Dianne Feinstein, still fighting the same people, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Janet Reno, and Sarah Brady. And they were all calling for more gun control and just saying, hey, we need to pass more gun control laws, and that's going to keep us safe. So I wanted to believe them, like, oh my gosh, is it really that easy to pass more gun control laws?
Pass a law and it's simple.
Yep, pass a law, exactly. Okay. Like the Ten Commandments, problem solved, yeah. Pass the Ten Commandments.
Murder's over, guys. I put it in a tablet.
Yeah.
We're done.
Adultery, no, yep. None, yep. No, nobody steals, nothing, you know, okay. Just wrote it on a tablet. So the more I studied, I thought, wow, these ladies are wrong. That they might have good intentions to protect me, but they're actually... They're wrong about this because the statistics are consistent that the more gun control laws that are passed, the higher the crime rate. And it's just kind of shocking to think about that. And so the Second Amendment, which has been debated, you know, you could write, there's been volumes,
sure.
You know, that would
literal
fill this
volumes.
Whole building yep. of what the word infringed means.
Mm-hmm.
And when it says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, isn't that like shall not kill, shall not steal kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so then they argue, where does the comma go? And so to me, if gun rights should not be infringed, then you really shouldn't have a lot of laws against them. And so from a common sense perspective, if you're a criminal, I know it's hard for people like us. I don't know. You have a little bit of a deviant mind. Maybe you could imagine being a criminal for a minute.
I'm envisioning being a criminal right this second.
I think you've played one probably on stage. So if you're a criminal and you want to break into a home,
mm-hmm.
Are you going to break into a home that you think might have firearms in to protect them? Or would you rather break into a home that, you know, they don't have guns to protect it?
Right.
What would you do?
Well, and really the answer is I wouldn't break into a home. But I guess, you know, to me, I think of it and I go, well, were I to, I guess I would roll the dice and think, well, you know, I don't know. If they,
mm-hmm.
you would, at the point of becoming a burglar or a robber or whatever, just mm-hmm. have to be like, they are either going to have a gun or not and be prepared for the mm-hmm. fact that they could have it or not have it. But I see what your point is saying if you know that people don't have guns.
So I can tell you have a pure heart because right. you haven't thought about that. But the people that they've actually interviewed in prisons who have broken into homes, who did think about it, it's called a hot robbery, or a hot burglar. Mm. So if they don't want it, a hot one would be breaking into a home where they know that the person has firearms. So they're less likely to break into a home that has firearms because they want, criminals are cowards, right? If you're going to break into a home, you're a coward.
Sure.
And so you want easy targets. So the same thing, just a little bit of common sense that we might need to have in politicians, maybe.
Right.
I think our world would be a better place is just to maybe have common sense and start to think like, hey, all these mass shootings that are taking place.
Sure.
The fact that they have like 1% of all mass shootings since 1950s, I do believe, only 1% have taken place in arenas where they have allowed people to have weapons. So 99% have taken place in gun-free zones. So it's just, a common sense thing. They're scumbag, coward, little chicken poops. You know,
sure,
I say poop on this show.
You can say poop.
Okay, and so they want to take. They want the easy targets.
Right.
And so that's the other thing is criminals prefer easy targets. They prefer unarmed victims. At one of the gun control rallies I've held, mm-hmm. one of the many. My favorite one is a guy has pantyhose over his head. Do they even make pantyhose anymore?
Yeah,
I mean, would
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm asking you. Would you know? I think
not,
they
and
do.
I'm not going to answer whether or not I know the answer.
I mean,
to that
you never know these days, you know. And so, like, he had pantyhose over his head, and he had a sign: "Criminals love gun control," because they're just an easier target. So, and the research, the chart that kind of messed up my life, I guess, in a good way or bad way, just that when you see something like people, since this is basically a Mormon program here,
right?
When they get a testimony of the Book of Mormon,
mm-hmm.
they feel compelled that they need to go and teach people about the Book of Mormon, about Christ. And so when I saw the chart that said it had murder rates comparing, and this was pre-Brady Bill. So the states that had the least amount of gun control laws, which would be Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, they had a murder rate of about 1 per 100,000. And the states, including District of Columbia, that had the most amount of gun control laws had about 80 murders per 100,000. Hmm. So those are FBI. That's from the Uniform Crime Report. So there's all, you know, statistics lie and, you know, the old figures lie and liars figure. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like you can use statistics to however you want. But if you just want to have straight across statistics, the Uniform Crime Report just lists statistics and doesn't editorialize.
Sure. Do you see the other point of view for someone who listens to this? The dangerous thing that I think of how you phrase it is a common sense argument, where if I disagree with you for whatever, that then I'm somehow sort of crazy or ignorant. And I push back on that a bit because I feel like I don't think to say if someone has a thought about a stricter gun control that they are being nonsensical or that they are being ignorant. I think that becomes a place where programs like the Who is America comes from is because it's so one side, you know, that everybody needs to be able to have as many guns as they want and there should be no control because that's how we're going to control everything, is because you're going to be living in fear that you could be shot because who knows who's going to have a gun because everyone can have one, to nobody has guns. Look at the countries where guns are completely outlawed and there aren't murders by guns in those countries. That sort of other side argument. It's not there. I don't feel as a people, regardless of religion, are ever going to feel comfortable in a place where it's just like, let's let everyone have guns. Okay. That's the answer. So what can be the place so that things, or I guess I would ask you this question. So if it's not gun control, some sort of, you know, mandate as far as controlling weapons, either the amount or the ability of the guns, things like these massive school shootings, like the LDS church that was where the guy was shot. Mm-hmm. You know, recently, like how are those things to be avoided? You know, it's a pretty well-known fact that there were guns in the chapel in Nevada. No one drew a gun. No one shot at the guy. That didn't save that situation. Yet that guy dead, his family mourning the loss of it. And so those things still occur. So it seems to me like there has to be some sort of bridge for someone that is so entrenched in that everyone should have as many guns and it's your interpretation of the Constitution, and this is okay, to someone who's just like, yeah, but you know what? I feel like maybe an automatic rifle for a regular person is unnecessarily. Like, there has to be some bridge where we can go from everyone has the right to have a gun to maybe not everyone needs a machine gun.
Well, I think that's a fair question, Richie, and I think that's the discussion that we need to be having to take the hype out of everything, because I can certainly understand, and not everybody has studied as much as I have. And let's just say if you're hearing sound bites on the media every day, and when you're emotional about it, you just want to do something.
Right.
And if I'm honest, I'm going to admit, I don't know how you stopped that church shooting.
Right.
A guy walks up to him point blank, pulls something out of his pocket. I mean, how many people do you see it? Like, now people are going to have post-traumatic stress in them when they see people pulling out a cell phone, which kind of look like guns sometime, or anything out of their pocket. And I get that. I see what you're saying. But again, the truth lies in the middle from what you're saying about.
But I don't think that anyone gets to the middle. That's what I'm saying. I hear what you're saying, and I feel like it's so far this side. And I feel like what I would be inclined to say would be something like, well, you know what? You know how I know I'll never get shot by my gun? If I don't have a gun. You know, which is super extreme. I know I'll never. It's sort of a ridiculous argument. But if I stand on a soapbox of, well, I think it's common sense. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of how you attributed that. That's common sense that if we just don't have guns, then people won't get shot. Because that's true. That is true. If there are not guns, people won't get shot.
And if there's no knives, I guess
people can't get stabbed. Exactly.
And if there's no cars, there's not going to be car wrecks.
Car accidents. Sure.
And, I mean, like, I'm still frazzled from the traffic jam coming here today. So I, but
I don't think my statement is any. I don't think that my statement is any less valid or valuable. And the problem is if I come from a point where I'm saying, you know what, really, you just need to understand that if we didn't have guns, I mean, you don't understand it because you love guns or you've studied guns or anything like that. The approach of saying that this is a common sense thing, to me, that doesn't fly. And that's why I feel sort of adamant to push back about it.
Okay,
because
I
don't think it's, I don't necessarily think that it's common sense. And when, you know, people are constantly getting shot, like some part has to be the fact that there's the availability of guns to people. Some part of that has to be that criminal who shot those people was able to get a gun. Some part of that has to be.
Okay, you want to start there?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take the criminal who got the gun.
Right.
There's 20,000 gun laws that are, or more, that have been passed to try to stop bad people from
to
getting
have guns. Sure.
So then you say, okay, so you pass laws at the gun store, and now the law is to have the background checks.
Sure.
And so when you go to a gun store, and they're really careful, because I have friends that are gun store owners, and they'll tell me that. But a lot of times they'll pass the background check,
sure,
but they'll get a feeling about them and they won't sell them one. Or there's also the straw man or the girlfriend or the boyfriend goes in to buy a gun. And so you get into these what ifs and where do they get them? And if I'm a criminal, am I going to buy a gun legally where now there's a record of it?
Sure, probably not, but by the mere availability of guns.
But by the mere availability, then you would say that I think there's 300 million guns in the United States.
Right.
Then I should be a murderer just because I have them. Just because they're available, let's say.
Sure.
But what you said a little earlier is like, you know, there's no guns, and so nobody gets killed by guns.
Right.
So I've always focused on, and I've just been dying to have this happen, and maybe we can make it happen,
right,
Richie, is that I've always said that we need to talk about what causes crime.
Okay.
And so I've been on interviews, you can look it up in U.S. News and World Report. I was invited to write a guest editorial on the 10-year anniversary of Columbine.
Mm, cool. I'll share a link to that, by the way, to this episode at theculturalhall.com so people can read it.
Okay. And like the other person that wrote with me was Ted Nugent. Mm. So he was inflammatory, and I love him. Like, my mom wouldn't let me listen to his music. So I could tell what kind of background I grew up in, right?
Right.
Puritanical Mormonism, no Pepsi, nothing. And,
sure.
And it's okay. That's the way, you know, people in my generation.
Some people are that way. It's
fine. So Ted Nugent took the in-your-face attitude, and mine was growing up, maybe you're old enough to remember this, but you have such a young face.
Oh, bless you.
My mom, I remember, like, kidnapping was a big deal in the 1968-ish, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm not that old.
Okay, rub it in. Okay. Okay, so, like, I remember, like, and this is what the article says, like, I'm like, Mom, what's a kidnap? And she said, it's when people steal people from, they take little kids.
Sure.
And so I was afraid to go to school. And I said, Mom, I'm afraid to go to school. And she said, no, you don't need to be afraid of going to school. Schools are the safest place in the world because nobody would want to harm a little kid.
Right.
Look at me. I'm getting emotional about this because I'm so angry about what has happened in our society,
right,
that anybody could open fire on innocent school children. And so that's how I grew up. And people in my generation still grew up with that, thinking we're safe at school because nobody's sick enough,
right,
to shoot little innocent children. And now to the thought that we have to, our kids are going to school learning how to hide from an active shooter.
Sure.
It's so upsetting to me. And just Sunday at church, we had a lesson on what to do if there's an active shooter at church.
Right.
So if we think schools are safe, certainly we think churches are even safer.
Right.
Because God will protect us.
Sure.
Right.
It's a safe haven from the outside
right.
world. Sure.
And so we don't even want to think that can happen. But I remember specifically what kind of shattered my view of a safe World in Utah was in 1988, and I was, I think, like 7 months pregnant with my first child. And I was watching on TV, and I saw that a woman who was 7 months pregnant had been murdered in a video store. Do you remember that one yet?
I don't.
And that her husband had gone to a scouting outing, and she had taken her three daughters to the video store. Something that's what we all did.
Sure.
I mean, that's going, wow, that seems like, did that even exist, video stores? But, you know, we take your kids and you go in your pajamas and you're having a fun sleepover. And she was pregnant, and a guy came in and shot her in front of her three girls.
Right.
And killed her. And then her baby was born blind and died 2 years later from seizures.
Jeez.
So I remember screaming about that. It upset me so bad to think that that was the kind of world that I would be bringing my child into, a sick world like that.
Right.
And then there another really murder that rocked Utah. But now there's so many that have rocked our safe world. And that was the ones that the couple that was watching the sunset, and a guy went and shot. He wanted to see what it felt like to kill somebody. Mm. So you're on a date, you know, and you're watching the sunset. So these kind
so
of
tragic
stories.
And they all have guns in them. That's the thing to me, that as I hear this, I think there is not, I'll Google mass stabbings, but I know from the 30th floor in Las Vegas, that guy wasn't throwing knives at people down below. Granted, mentally ill, granted, shouldn't have been able to get a gun, and no gun law would have stopped him, but I can't stab 50 people before someone stops me. There is no way. That is an impossibility that I can do that. So to equate that, it's like, well, you know, it couldn't possibly be a gun thing, or we just need to really, it's not guns. Everybody deserves the right to be a gun, to a gun owner, because, you know what, if it's just the gun, then I would be a murderer. At some point, on some level, there has to be a very drastic thing done about guns, because that's how people get shot, is by guns, by these in what I deem to be fairly inappropriate weapons for civilian people to have. Not that we don't need them. Not that.
What kind of guns would you consider inappropriate for civilians to have?
I think anything that's automatic. I can think of no reason except for it's my Second Amendment right that a person would have need of an automatic rifle.
Okay, so let me ask you.
Okay.
Do you think that an automatic rifle is an assault weapon?
It doesn't matter to me whether it's deemed as an assault or not. I don't think that anyone should be able to fire
massive
amounts of rounds.
So I'll tell you, let me explain why I asked that.
Okay.
Because a big concern for me, I'm not really it's so funny because, my poor husband, how many guys want to call and talk about guns?
Sure.
You know?
It's your wife home? Can we talk about guns?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I fall asleep. I get so bored, you know, talk about, I got this. And, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm more into gun rights. Mm-hmm. So, but what I can tell you that what I even know, like what I have to know is that what they're calling is when they want to have the assault rifle ban, it's not a fully automatic weapon.
Okay.
You have to pull the trigger one time for every bullet expended.
Sure, but I can still look at my finger. I can do that 10 times, and that's still... Why do I need that? I'm not hunting a deer and shooting a deer 10 times. It's not my food. If that's your thing, then that's fine.
But all guns are like that, unless you want to have a pump action, a bolt action rifle.
Sure.
And that therein becomes problematic for people who understand weapons and they want to start. Okay, let's take a slippery slope, the nose in the camel's tent.
Sure.
Technically, if you're calling it an assault rifle ban, then everything then has to be banned except for bolt action rifles.
Sure.
Because they're, by their definition of an assault rifle, meaning one trigger pull.
Sure. Then let me define it differently so that hundreds of people don't get shot. I don't know how to define that.
Okay.
And I think the bigger picture for me, because we will just go back and forth as far as this whole thing goes. The bigger picture for me is that, first of all, there's not any solution between you and I. You will say, you know what, well, then we have to define it's a slippery slope, and then and we can't do this at all. And I'll say, at some point we have to do something, and you'll stay where you're at, and I'll stay where I'm at, and then nothing gets done.
Well, I'm happy. I'm glad to know you're, I didn't know you were, you know, that you felt this way.
Sure.
And I think it's helpful because you have a big following, you know, it's, you do. And I think that your, that the cultural hall is a good venue for people to talk about issues away from a commercial every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm not worried how you're going to cut and slice and dice.
I won't edit this at all.
Yeah. So this is good, open, honest discussion. But so let me just say a couple things that I think that we could agree on. If guns are used to take a life, at the very least, you know that they're used to save a life. So if we're using statistics, okay, there are statistics out there done by the one that I first became aware of 25 years ago was the Gary Click, and he was an ACLU professor at the University of Utah, so liberal, okay? And he did studies and concluded that 2.5 million lives a year are saved by a gun. Let me tell you what is so... so powerful about a gun, besides, you know, they're powerful, is that people are afraid of them. And a lot of times in these instances, look at me. Do I look scary?
Well, I mean, I didn't want to say anything.
I do. No, well, I'm a little older and I'm,
The fear of them, fear of the repercussions of what would happen, like you mentioned with the getting broken into, or just sort of social normal behavior. If you know that someone within the law could have a gun that could correct your action, were you acting out of line? Sure.
So if you, the other statistic or whatever, I think it's common sense. If I show a gun, they're more likely to leave. And I don't even have to say, you little stinker, get out. You know what? I actually one of my classes, I had to learn to say the F-bomb. I won't say it here.
No, please. But, my bloody ears.
But they, I mean, because I guess the, you know, but here the thing is with, if I had a gun, I probably could say, get out, you little stinker, you know. But for effect, for me, somebody that looks like kind of a ditzy blonde, for the effect, I think it's better to cuss a little, you know, because you look a little more serious. But so I can tell you that I've been in these classes where I've been in classes with victims, Richie, where they've been a victim in their home. And I've watched them transform by learning to shoot a gun and to know that I'm not going to be a victim in my own home.
Right.
Guns are a defense weapon. That's why if I want, you know, like, can I tell criminals they're a defense weapon, not an offense? What's the old, a best defense, the best offense is a good defense?
Yeah.
I mean,
Alice, the old TV show.
Okay, so that is with firearms, and we are not the aggressor with guns. And so the honest law-abiding citizens, we are not the aggressors, and we have to make sure that that always stays the case, and that we, in fact, concealed carry holders, our records are checked every 24 hours. So what I wanted to say, in the U.S. News and World Report, I have offered, let's sit down and talk about what causes crime, because, like, as you say, if there's not going to be shootings if there's no guns.
Right.
So if you could hermetically seal Salt Lake City
and
keep the guns out, would crime disappear?
No, of course not.
So how do we...
But you know what would? Mass shooting crime would be gone. If there were not guns, there would be no mass shootings. I would not fear going to church, because what is the worst that someone could do? Stab me? I could get a punch back in a stab. Chainsaw me? Sneak up on... You know what I'm saying? There's something so lethal. I mean, those sort of examples, and again, I'm not calling for the ban of all guns, but I
see what you're saying could make common sense to a lot of people, okay? But I'm just, let's say, could you consider a prison hermetically sealed? But I mean, how do drugs get in prison? How do they get stuff in prison to kill people with?
Sure.
That's the most policed place in the world, and because, like, crime starts happening, and they get a little favor, they get a little kickback, whatever, and all of a sudden they've got drugs or they've got weapons in prison. So it's going to happen, but I maintain, I would still like to have the discussion where we talk about what causes crime.
Which you would say would be mental illness?
Causes crime?
Yeah.
You would have to have a mental illness expert from my research on it.
Sure.
And from my friends that have mental illness. That's a slippery slope.
Sure.
But I believe it's even NAMI, the National Association for Mental Illness, they have said before that there's no connection to violence and mental illness.
Okay.
So we don't get to automatically say...
So boil it down to me then. What would you say causes crime? People? Just people in general? People existence? People always have crime? Where there's people, there will be crime?
Probably.
Okay.
I mean, let's face it. What was the first crime weapon ever used in the whole history of the world? Cain and Abel.
Sure.
What did he use?
It was porridge. No, I don't know. I'm just
you don't know?
I'm just kidding. He uses porridge. I'm just kidding.
Well, it was a rock.
Sure.
And do you know, like, and I think I can say this word on here for donkey.
Can say ass. That's
okay,
fine.
Okay. Okay. I've read that more people have been killed throughout world history by the jawbone of an ass.
Okay.
Okay, because that was the weapon at that time. So for...
Sure, but I think we're catching up.
We're catching... I'm not really sure. There's all kinds of interesting statistics out there.
Sure.
But so let's say this. In the areas where we are catching up in the mass shootings where they're happening, they are happening in areas where there's no guns allowed, where there's a sign that says no guns allowed. So get back, like, thou shalt not kill, right?
Right.
And we're here, and especially, you know, for Mormons, like, in the Book of Mormon, they go after murder and adultery and,
right.
And talk in length about that. So how do you stop murder? I don't know. How do you... domestic violence, start there, I would say, because I fought a gun ban for domestic violence. Mm-hmm. In a nutshell, let me just throw this out there and see how many people I'm going to get mad at me.
Sure.
But the law was, the Lautenberg Amendment was a federal law that for the first time in the history that you could lose your gun rights over a misdemeanor of domestic violence. And now domestic violence could be defined as you yelling at your girlfriend or your spouse or your partner, or you just like hit the desk and say, I'm tired of this. Or if you just grab somebody's arm and say, settle down, mm-hmm. That's domestic violence. And so you can lose gun rights over domestic violence, misdemeanor domestic violence. So I started one of the first online petitions in the late 1996 or something to mm-hmm. ban, to repeal the Lautenberg Amendment. So whenever I take on an issue, I study it in depth. And what I found was that the number one motive for murder, it was back then, and it might be close at least, is domestic violence. So, and what's the number one murder weapon in domestic violence? Hands and feet. So I'm just, and guns are actually the least used because domestic violence is a crime of passion. So the most gory murders are committed in crimes of passion with domestic violence. So I remember reading stories that they'll break a pool cue. One guy, you know, grabbed a vacuum and beat his wife up.
Sure.
Or just beat the heck out of him with their fists. Because it's a physiological fact. I know there's some really tough girls out there, but guys have twice as much muscle mass. And girls have twice as much fat. An issue I'm really upset at Heavenly Father about, like why he made that way, because the girls are the ones that expected to look good and the guys, you know, they can get fat and that's okay. But anyway, said, okay. So the protesters showed up to protest me in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. because we had a news conference with some legislators who were sponsoring the repeal of the Lautenberg. And their sign was, the things that you're saying that sound good, okay? Mm-hmm. No guns for wife beaters. So what's wrong with that? It's a wife beater. Guys at the gym wear wife beater t-shirts,
right.
Not wife gunslinger shirts. So that's the number one motive usually for murder. Okay, so let me just propose this out there. Also in my research, I found, and this was Attorney General Jan Graham quoted these statistics, that alcohol is involved, I think, in 80% of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. So with the same logic of, you know, we got to ban guns because they cause murder and there wouldn't be any shootings.
Right.
I contend, since this is a Mormon audience here, and
right,
that it doesn't it then also follow that there would be less crime without alcohol? And what about drugs? Our family has been the victim of many property crimes, again, because we own property. And I'm a political activist. Do you know how much property damage I've suffered at my house?
Sure.
So when I've gone to the judge, the judge will say 85 to 90% of people are in here because of drugs. So if we're looking, if we're going to have that roundtable discussion and talk about how we solve crime, so I thought, how would I get laughed out of my, you know, or would my house get vandalized? Or what if I said, okay, if you go to purchase alcohol and you have a domestic violence conviction on your record,
mm-hmm,
you shouldn't be allowed to purchase alcohol. I mean, what do you think?
Well, what do I personally think, or what do I think?
Well,
in a general aspect?
I mean, because the logic follows.
Sure.
If I've been on guns,
you're asking
now,
the wrong person, because I don't have a problem with that at all. But
with doing that?
Yeah.
Really?
I. But
wow.
I have.
You're gonna get a lot of hate mail because you do another radio show.
I have a stigmatization towards alcohol that I don't know that I've discussed too much here in the culture. All I don't care for it in the slightest. So
wow.
I recognize that argument in that context, mm-hmm, regarding alcohol, and look no further than prohibition and what a disaster, mm-hmm, that was, right? Whether we lead it to that extreme or not. Like, I understand that. But so then if not, and then I want to take a break and I want to talk about the TV show.
Okay.
So if it's not in some way the banning of some weapons, mm-hmm, the non-manufacturing and the destruction of some weapons, right? So like, we don't make any more of these and we turn them in
and destroy them like they did in Australia? Is that what you're talking about?
Of maybe certain kinds of essentially a mass destruction. If not those things, if the answer to you is not some sort of minimizing of the amount of weapons,
okay,
you're saying it's not guns, then what is the answer? Because you're saying, well, what causes crime? And you're going all around to those things, and you're saying, well, we're not going to ban alcohol. To me, it's not acceptable to have mass shootings. That's a socially non-acceptable thing to me.
And it's not acceptable to me either. You saw how emotional I got about it.
So then I guess the question I would just pose back, and then I want you to answer it, and then I want to take a break because I do want to get to some other stuff and allow people a chance to type out an email to either you or to me that says, this is ridiculous. So then what is, or is that part of it? And there are so many things that are part of it, or is it, I don't know, and I just hope we fix it.
Well, I think that's what happens is they say, I don't know how to solve this. Let's pass gun control laws. Because when there's a murder, everybody wants to find somebody that did it.
Right.
It just makes us feel better if we can do something.
Right.
That's why I maintain that it is people try not to pass laws on what do they call it, like with the bloody shirt. You know?
Like an emotional reaction to that. But again, that doesn't answer my question.
Okay, well, let me say this. People, the victims, because you're a victim of a crime, you don't get to take away my civil rights to own a firearm.
Okay.
I didn't do it.
Right.
You know, the old Bart Simpson, I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Right.
Go after the ones that did it. I don't know how to stop crime. God doesn't know how to stop crime. If God doesn't know how to stop crime, I don't know if we, well, yeah, he passed commandments.
Right.
But people still do it. So I would offer up solutions that you and I have learned at church, mm-hmm, since we were kids, like maybe family dinner together. The viewing of pornography is dangerous to young minds and really adult minds, you know. Mm-hmm. Just video games, violent video games, that desensitizes them. There's been studies done on that. I think we need to the credit, this is not my idea. School teachers did this after the Parkland shooting,
mm-hmm,
and they said, but they said, we're going to take this issue on. And so they started like this niceness campaign where we notice the person at school that doesn't have friends,
right,
and you write them a nice note. So you step up and you notice things. And I can say in my life, I don't even need to be talking about gun control. I used to win awards, you know, for being nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I did notice the people that were alone in school.
Right.
And I did be nice to them. So it may be, just maybe, didn't we always learn? I mean, how many lessons? I've had a million Sunday school lessons and young women's lessons on at sacrament meeting talks. Just Sunday, a talk by one of the young boys said, quote of Mosiah 2:17, when you are in the service of your fellow being.
You're in the service of your God, sure.
Exactly. So, and he said, part of that is just smiling at somebody. I'm going to start crying here, but I just know how much it means when I'm having a down day and somebody is nice to me. And I think the solutions lie within ourselves as human beings. As I don't have this dark view of the world, actually, Rich. Mm-hmm. And people might think that way because I'm a gun rights activist. But after I had this really bad thing that we'll talk about after next break happen to me with Sacha Baron Cohen, I thought everybody in the world was evil. Mm-hmm. And I had such a horrible experience. But on the plane ride home, on the way home, I had at least 10 people step up to me who noticed I was sad and helped make my day a little brighter and helped me to get through a really, really horrible experience. I even had the flight attendant, who was black, by the way, and I'll say that because I don't notice color. I only bring up her that she's not white because we can be nice to each other no matter what color we are. And she said, "What y'all doing? What y'all looking so sad for?" Mm-hmm. She goes, "You look like you need some treats from first class." Mm-hmm. And so she brought me treats from first class.
Yeah.
And then I found it was like gluten-free pretzels. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, my daughters had gluten-free illnesses since they were little kids. And I'm like, wow, these are the best gluten-free pretzels I've ever had. So she goes, "Well, you just come up with me." And then while everybody's getting off the plane, and you're going to get all of them. So I went up there and she's like, she told all of her flight attendants' friends, like, "I want you to give this lady, you get in there, you give her all of our gluten-free pretzels." I mean, you know, but things like that. Like,
sure.
And I was able to make it through that. So we just, I've always been about, I don't want to talk about gun control. You know how sick I'm talking about gun control? Holy cow. You know, like, I want to talk about how we be nice to people to make them feel better. And maybe we can make a difference in their life so they don't commit a crime.
Right. I don't disagree with you. As far as to say, I think that we as a society can do a lot better by a lot of people. I think that we can be kinder. I think that we can look out for individuals, that we can notice those who would otherwise be lost, who might be affected by home situations, by relationship things.
Right.
I do not disagree with that at all. I, however, don't think that that is the ultimate in the solutions. I think I guess we'll just leave it there.
Gun control is the ultimate?
No. Okay. I don't think so, because I mean, given in the United States of America, as you know, as I know, that will never be a thing. It will never be, like you mentioned, Australia. There will never be in the United States a thing where some president comes in, as much as different parties like to say, someone's going to come in and take all your guns. That will never be an existent thing.
But they will try.
But they'll fail. The United States, you know, some leader may try that at some point, maybe. I think that that's more fear-mongering than anything.
But they've made statements. You do know the statements.
Sure. But I think that there are 330 million people in the United States. How many gun holders in the United States? I've got to know that at least 10 million of those people would not allow something like that to happen.
And I hope they don't. But really, right. Richie, what I found out in my life, how many people really have the courage to step up to the plate and stand up for what they believe in?
Sure.
Look at the members of who we go to church with.
Sure.
What do they do? Like, put their focus on, fancy handouts, word activities. What is more important than freedom? There's nothing. It's the very foundation of Mormonism.
Right.
Every Mormon should be a political activist. In fact, you know what? One of the most spiritual experiences I've had of my life is that I took on Orrin Hatch with some letter, I can't remember, but it went on the internet, and a sniper found the letter, and he he was so happy that, I guess, you know, I took on Orrin Hatch on some issues. So he took me to dinner, and he was Mormon. And I was just talking about the war in heaven. It's all about, the devil wanted to force us to do right, and Jesus wanted us to choose to have our free agency. Because from kids from a little time, what do they say when you try to do something for them? Me do it. Me do it. Mm-hmm. We want to be our own. We make up our own minds. So people in my family that are close to me who've chosen to leave the church, good for them. You know, they wanted to do it. Me do it. I'll make up my own mind. I don't have a testimony.
Right.
Well, good for them, because if I didn't believe in that, I'm taking away their free agency. So we were talking about that, and here's a sniper, you know, that's done stuff that nobody wants to ever do that, but they do that to protect us. And he, being Mormon, understood. And he looked at me and said, Jana Lee, Jesus Christ is freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I don't really know how many people really understand that, what freedom means. They need to seriously look at why we're even here and what the Book of Mormon is about. And even the Bible, it's all about our ability to choose. And crime happens because God said that people have a right to choose to be criminals, right? I mean, is that weird?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know how to make them be good.
Right. Let's couch it. I think that's a fairly good discussion.
Okay.
I'm excited for people to weigh in on that in whichever way they may.
Well, thanks, because that was actually a first for me to get a lot of those feelings out, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. And I want you to know that in some of these things, both you, Jana Lee, and you who might be listening, on some of this, I don't know that I wholeheartedly ascribe myself to the things that I say, but I like to push in the other way and just say, you know, hang on, or what about? Mm-hmm. There are certainly arguments that I've heard, so I want to share that. If you want to contact us as far as this episode goes, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the TV show, Who is America? But you can email us, contact@theculturalhall.com. Find us on any of the social medias. Let's take a break and come back. We'll make this only a two-part episode of The Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. Are you experiencing panic attacks, nausea, or diarrhea? Is your computer not turning on? Is it running super slow? Is your internet crawling? Or is it just randomly crashing? You could be suffering from ICS, Irritable Computer Syndrome. I want you to ask yourself, when was the last time you had your PC cleaned? Over time, Windows, updates, spyware, malware, and dangerous viruses will make your computer run like crap. You need to bring in your laptop or desktop PC, no matter what brand it is, and let me run a 100% free virus scan, malware, and spyware scan on your computer. Don't wait and risk losing everything. Now, why are we doing this for free? Because we want to impress you so much that if you or any of your friends or family need a computer, service, or phone repair, you come to PC Laptops first. Get into any one of our locations right now or check us out at PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, where computers start at $7.99. PC Laptops, we love you!
Hey, you guys, I want to talk to you about bestdjinutah.com. Why, that's the company that I have started for doing my DJing weddings and live events. Whatever you need, I am your guy to do it. So whether you're a lifer or a convert to this podcast show, or you just happen to be listening for the first time, if you are in need of a wedding DJ or an MC for your event, or just a DJ for your business opening, go to bestdjinutah.com. Now, I know it says Utah, but guess what? If you want me to come to your event and you're not in Utah, I'll do that too. You're going to have to pay for me to be there, but I'm more than willing to do that as well. It's bestdjinutah.com. Emails there, phone numbers there. Would love to hear from you and then help you make your event that much better. Look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for supporting the Cultural Hall podcast. But it's a show. You knew that.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. One in five children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
Time for the second half of this episode with Janalee Tobias. We're not going to talk gun rights except for how it pertains to the episode of Who is America? It's the show that's on Showtime, hosted by Sacha Baron Cohen. The premise is he dresses up, disguises himself, and then goes around and talks to all sorts of leaders. Not necessarily just right-leaning. I know that there's also left-leaning folks as well.
They're the token lefties.
Yeah, as you call them. The token lefties.
That's what they are.
That are within the show. But talking to folks like yourself, Roy Moore, Sarah Palin. Basically, the premise is he gets put in disguise, as it were, and then has sort of just a discussion, right? Basically trying to get you guys to do different things or to say different things or discussion about various topics in the political scheme of America. Your episode about guns. And gun rights. So pick it up from there. How did you find out about the show? What was it like? Go for it.
Okay. Well, I have a website, and I get quite a few media inquiries.
What's the website?
It's WAGC.com.
WAGC.com. Women Against Gun Control.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a little outdated. I need to be cloned. I fight for a lot of causes, but it gets quite a lot of traffic. So I get quite a few media inquiries, and I check them out before I go and agree to be on one. I'll try not to go down a tangent, but I was in a lawsuit for 9 years on a freedom of speech issue that I won. And so for a lot of those years, I couldn't talk about gun rights because they were trying to paint me out as a radical as part of the free speech lawsuit. So so the media inquiry said that they were they wanted to talk to me about gun rights, and her name's Ashley Winthrop, and I say her name because she's been used. I've seen her name on other people that they've conned. And she was the executive producer of First Freedom Television, and that they knew that I had been active in fighting for women's gun rights.
Okay.
And that they wanted to do a show in Israel with the Israeli security force to talk about commonalities. I would say that we share some things as far as defense views or they armed their teachers in Israel because everybody hates Israel. And so I was like, oh, I don't know, you know, I don't like to do, I'm getting old, you know, like it's easy to do an interview when you're 35, you know, but you see all the pretty newscasters on TV. And
interesting. So a self-image thing for you.
It's a self-image thing, but look at everybody on TV. They're perfect.
Sure.
So let's say if you wanted to be an activist, and you don't look like the perfect people on TV, you don't want to go on and, you know, but it's a whole different issue, right? Okay, so, but I thought, okay, it's for Israel TV, and I want to talk about this. People have been telling me, Tobias, you got to get back on and talk about gun rights. So I thought, okay, I'll go on, and I'll start getting used to being on camera again. So I answered them, and I said, yeah, you know, let me talk to you about it. I need to talk to your producers about it. And they said, fine. So I talked to like three people on a conference call, and I said, why did you ask me? And they said, well, we see that you're a pioneer in the women's gun rights
Which
movement.
Is fair to say about you, right?
They're, right. I would say
that's not inaccurate.
I was one of the first females to come out and say that I was pro-gun.
Okay.
And I'm probably right now the oldest female gun rights organization in the world, since it's the United States, because there wouldn't be in the world because the guns are not allowed in a lot of countries.
Sure.
We've had chapters in countries where guns are not allowed, but it's not, but you can still talk about gun rights.
Right.
It's a big issue. Okay, so they sounded legit, and they said that they wanted to talk about gun safety, which to me, I've always wanted to have on a big forum promote gun safety for children, it's the Eddie Eagle Gun Safety Program. And that is, it comes in handy for things like if somebody leaves a gun at the planetarium, for example.
Yeah. That being a recent story, a woman took her gun off and left it in the aquarium bathroom, came back, and there was one in the chamber, as I understand.
Oh, very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
And her kids, I don't know if they have been taught gun safety, but that would be, it sounds bizarre, but there's actually a lot of cases where kids come upon guns. And they can be like, somebody commits a crime, so they throw it in a garbage can, or they throw it on the field, or they just want to get rid of it.
Right.
Or their dad goes hunting, and they leave their gun for a few seconds before they put it away.
Right.
And so kids, it's the parents' responsibility first to keep them out of the reach of children. But if there's a situation when they come upon it, or in example, in I can't say where, but a neighborhood close to me, let's say, where the child that had not been taught gun safety pointed a gun at sister Tobias when she was in grade school, because they hadn't been taught gun safety.
Sure.
That you never, ever, ever point guns at anybody. And first of all, if you see a gun, you stop, you don't touch it, you leave the area until an adult. So
I, by the way, agree with this, the teaching kids and to respect and to revere a gun.
That's awesome.
We are on the same page.
Good. And they should be. It's just like...
I was about to say it's unfortunate, and I want to rescind that. But kids should be taught about guns.
Right. And I used to think...
If they're going to exist in society, then kids need to be taught about
them. Oh my gosh, Richie, how long I've tried to get it in the schools.
Well, let's get it done.
I would love it.
I'm on board.
We'll talk about kid gun safety.
Okay. So anyway, sorry.
Because in Utah, I like to say you're more likely to find a pistol underneath a bed than porn, right?
Yeah. Well,
pretend.
Yeah, okay.
It's Happy Valley. No, there's no crime. None of that goes on here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, but now it's not under the bed. It's on the computer.
Yeah, in the phone.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so... So I got gun safety coloring books, and they arranged travel to go to Hershey, Pennsylvania to film. They said they were a production company and they were filming this. So everything checked out. They had a website, Facebook site, and on their Facebook site and website, they're a documentary company. And on Facebook, they said, hey, we want to talk to people, you know, to shoot guns and, you know, come to an understanding. Let's just talk about guns. So everything checked out. And I asked my husband, you know, he's the pillar of he's my rock. And he goes, yeah, I think you need to go do that. So so I took a flight out. They flew me, and it was a harrowing flight. It was in winter, and just stuff started happening with my brain, like a traffic jam coming here today. Mm-hmm. And so then I arrived at the hotel about midnight, and you'll like this story because my brother had gone on a Mormon mission to Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And it was pretty religious back then, that was in the 70s. And so I thought, oh, my brother went on a mission here. I'll just go walk around Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Oh,
and oh my goodness. You know what a police officer told me? Because
he said, what are you doing out here? Go back to your hotel.
Basically,
are you crazy?
Yeah. And I'm like, wow. Because it's just bars everywhere, you know. And on Utah, Saturday night, a lot of us are home preparing Sunday school lessons.
Sure.
And I really just wanted to find some ice cream somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me that nobody's religious anymore. And he goes, this is a scary place and nobody's religious. So I found a bakery. And so I walked into the bakery and this guy carded me. And he goes, excuse me, ma'am, I'll need your ID. And I'm like, oh, you're so charming. You need my ID. And he goes, no, I'm serious. And I go, I thought this is a bakery. And what it was, it's like a speakeasy.
Okay.
And so like back in Prohibition, they disguised things as bakeries.
Oh, cool.
And it's really
interesting.
I'm just looking for a place to buy a cookie.
I just want a cookie or something sweet, a little ice cream, please, and then I can go back to my
hotel. Yeah, because in fact, there was a line, and I'm like, wow, this looks like Utah. Saturday night, people are lined up at the ice cream store,
awesome.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So it was a bar. So anyway, so... the next morning, they kept changing the times. They were going to pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they, at the airport, by the way, there was a guy that his driver hadn't showed up. So he said, can I ride in the car with you? And I said, yeah, that's fine. So he asked me why I was there. And I said, well, I'm going to go do an interview about guns. And he said, wow, I wonder if we're with the same production company. Mm-hmm. It turns out that we were, because it was the same people. So I said, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. So he never showed up, by the way, and I'll explain why that was important. Okay. Because it was a tender mercy from God, in my opinion. So when I walked in the set, they had a limo driver, and they kept all my luggage in the limo, which, what are we taught? Like, don't ever leave your luggage unattended. You never know what they're going to do with your luggage. So that, I wasn't comfortable with that. Then they took me into a room, and everybody's talking like they're conservative on my side, you know. And so, you know, we're just talking politics, and then all of a sudden they shove a contract in front of my face and tell me to read it, you know, but that I didn't have time. And I said, I never signed anything without reading it. So I said, this is just basically I'm given permission to use my image. And they said, yeah. So then I walked onto this set, and I met the character named Iran that has been doing a lot of damage to a lot of politicians, who just last week a politician from Georgia had to resign.
Sure.
Not hurt, because he pulled his pants down.
Mm-hmm.
And got him to do weird stuff. It's the same character. His name was Iran. I don't know what his last name is.
But that's the Sacha Baron Cohen character.
Yeah, right. I had no idea it was him. So I walk in. It's calls me Yanali. Yanali, I'm so glad they didn't send a liberal from Hollywood. You know, so, and they're like, we love Trump in Israel. Turns out, like, he really hates Trump, and he's kind of trying to get even with Trump.
Sure.
That's why he's doing these things. So, and then, so when I walked in, they said, hey, when you'll have, they're just filming up Israeli Mossad or doing some defense moves. So I walked in, and these guys that look like they could be in a James Bond movie, you know, totally buff, muscly guys in the black tight T-shirts, and they're fighting each other. And so Iran, who is Sacha Baron Cohen, Yanali, would you like to try to show you how to disarm? Would you like to have them teach you how to disarm someone? And I'm like, okay. And I kind of giggle a lot. It's kind of my trademark. He goes, why are you laughing?
Do you do the nervous giggle that I do? I do it too.
Yeah. I just did it.
I'm having so much fun. I am dying on the inside right now.
Yeah. And people that hate me, they hate my giggle. People that like me, they like her, whatever.
Sure.
But so I'm like, he goes, why are you giggling? And I go, well, because you told me they were harmless, and I think they could pretty much kill me with their bare hands.
Right.
So they're pointing a firearm right here at my forehead. You never, like, I'm so careful with guns. I don't even point toy guns at people. Were they real firearms? I don't know. They look like them to me.
Right.
They assured me that they weren't allowed to use real firearms, but they all looked very real to me.
Right.
So they're already messing with my head. They're pointing guns at me, and I'm disarming them. They're letting me.
Sure.
What they could do is say, oh, she generally talks about, you know, you have to have guns for protection, but look how easy she disarms Israeli Mossad. So I'm just playing along with that. Like,
sure.
Oh, don't shoot me. You know, I have kids. And so we messed around like that. And then we sat down.
It seems fairly harmless to this point.
Right.
I know
this
is a traumatic experience, but so far it seems like it's like, okay.
Because I, you know, like, we've done things like that before. You know, you do stuff like that in self-defense classes.
Sure.
And at BYU, I took self-defense classes with my family home evening brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they teach you these moves where if the guy grabs you here, you do this and you do this, and then you tell them I could flip my family home evening brother when he let me, but then when they said use all your strength and now you're on meth or something.
Uh-huh.
So that's another reason I figured, you know, I think the gun is really the best protection for a woman.
Okay
so then we sit down for the interview, and he's just so very, very likable, and he's making me feel so comfortable. And he just, tell me why you fight against gun control. And so I give my speech that I just gave here, and I've given 1,000 times. And then he said, why? And I took gun safety coloring books, by the way, and gave them to him, expecting they would talk about that. And then he said, why are there so many shootings at the schools? And I said, because they're gun-free zones. And he said, exactly, Yanali. So he said, in Israel, they have security guards. They arm the teachers. And then he showed me like a diagram of a classroom where they have guns, even in the classroom. And he said, so what do you do if the terrorist comes in and they shoot the teachers and they shoot the guards? And I said, I don't know. And he said, you arm the students.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, I don't know. I'm not really buying that. You know, I just, it's wrong on a lot of levels to put that on a student.
Right.
To stop a terrorist attack. So then he brings out an iPad and they had a news broadcast from Jerusalem in Hebrew with English subtitles. And it had the story of a 3-year-old from Israel who had taken a gun in a backpack, and a terrorist came in that day and started shooting. And he remembered that he had his gun. So he took out the gun and he killed the terrorist,
which is obviously a fake story.
And I didn't think it was because it looked real.
It looked real. Right. It had all the elements of a story.
Yep.
So.
Benjamin Netanyahu gave him a medal, you know, and they were in the whole country of Israel where he was the hero. And so Benjamin Netanyahu wanted to teach a program called the Kindy Guardians.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, I'm still not buying into it, you know, and he said, well, why not, Yanali? You know, and they have the child, they teach children to kill, which they do in some countries. We've seen the movies.
Sure.
The child soldiers. And remember Farquaad, the Mickey Mouse character that in Iran that teaches the to kill Jews?
Yeah, sure.
And hate Jews, kill Jews, hate Americans, kill Americans. There's a lot of people that hate us that want to kill us, you know? And they use knives, by the way, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a whole different issue.
I appreciate that. All
okay.
Right. I appreciate that.
So he said, we need to, you can train the children to, the special children have talents. And I know this, and it's personal for me because my son was killed in a terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
So he had me all hyped up. Would you help me teach the children in Israel how to fire an automatic weapon?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he said he just said fire a gun.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, yes, because what else was I supposed to say? And so I said, you know what? I need to talk with my producers. So we went into a room and I said, do you realize what you're getting me into? You know, I didn't come here to do this. I'm not afraid of controversy, but I don't believe in arming students.
Right.
And I said, if this is what Benjamin Netanyahu wants, and he was saying that, you know, that Trump might want it too. And so they lie the whole time.
Sure.
And so I said, can you find out if his son was really killed in a terrorist attack? So they said, okay, well, you know, so they came back and they said, yeah, Benjamin Netanyahu wants it and his son was killed. So it's kind of, I think if you're a Christian, you kind of feel allies with Israel, right?
Okay, okay.
Right? I mean, that's Jesus people.
I can understand
people,
that,
but,
sure.
Yeah.
Jesus people. I bet all of Israel loves that.
I mean, well, okay.
My Jesus people.
But he came from there.
Bible
people.
Saying.
Bible people.
Sure.
Okay. I mean,
I just
that's
like
the whole
Jesus people for some reason.
I'm a Jesus people.
Yeah, I'm a Jesus people.
The Holy Land, okay. Right? I mean,
sure.
It's kind of the chosen. I mean, why does God have the chosen Holy Land? It's like, why couldn't it be in a rainforest or something, you know? But, okay, so we want to help Israel. And so then I read lines off a teleprompter, and they're ridiculous lines saying, I'm going to show boys, and he said, talking a childlike voice. So boys and girls, here's a weapon. I'm going to show you how to safely handle a weapon. So he brought out a 22, and I thought, okay, I can see a 22.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, show gun safety. So I was like, okay, keep your finger off the trigger. Don't point guns at anybody.
Right, which this, I think, is valuable information for kids, right?
Right.
I think teaching a kid about gun safety.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk, you know, like, I have an idea. Well, I'll tell you later. So so then he brings out, like, a really ugly, evil-looking gun. I didn't even know what it was. I'm not a gun nut, okay?
Yeah.
But I knew that it was wrong for little kids. And I said, what's that? He said it was a Mach 4,
okay.
Which I think you can turn into a full auto. And so I said, he said, show how to load it. And I go, I don't know how to load that one. So then he goes, I told you, Yanali, I would not embarrass you. So then he brings out his Israeli Mossad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they handle this weapon just beautifully. It's a turn on for me to see guys handle weapons. It's sexy, Richie.
Do
you know how to handle weapons?
I don't. I am the most unsexual person when it comes to that. Then
there's other things about you though. Okay,
oh,
so don't have a conflict. Okay,
no complex.
Okay, so, and then he brings out another, like, an Uzi.
Sure, it just becomes comically ridiculous at
that
point.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay. So then, when I knew something was seriously wrong, he brought out the .22 pistol inside of a puppy.
Mm-hmm. And like a stuffed puppy.
Yeah. And it's, I was just like, ooh, like, I felt complete, like, instant, you know, something's wrong. Now, Yana Lee, show the children that what you do, this is a puppy pistol. You just put the bullets in, and you into the puppy's tummy, and you tickle the puppy's tummy, and the food comes out, and the bad guy's going to go away. And I'm like, I'm reading this, you know, and then he's telling me. And I said, no, I don't agree with this. Like, you don't put guns in stuffed animals.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, Yana Lee, psychologists have approved this. They really have. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading the lines on the teleprompter. And then there's the puppy pistol song is, now point the pistol. And what you say, this is how you shoot the bad guys, is up, down, left, right, staying alive, up, down. Left, right, staying alive. And he's like, Yana Lee, you have a beautiful voice. So, and then he even brought out a kitty and we did a dueling kitty and puppy pistol duet. And so the next, and by the way, the bullets looked like Kren's. And he said, Yana Lee, tell the children, like, look at the pretty bullets. And I said, I don't think this is, bullets are dangerous, and I don't think kids shouldn't be confused dangerous bullets with Kren's.
Like, yeah, exactly.
No, psychologists, just they tell you have to make the kids not afraid. So then the next gun was the bunny gun, mm-hmm. and the magazine, you at least know what the magazine, so many people call it a cartridge.
Sure.
And it was painted like carrots. Mm. So Yana Lee, you just show them that you feed the bunny. You just put the food in the bunny tummy. You tickle the bunny's tummy, and the food comes out, and the bad guy's gonna go away. So the bunny gun song was, head, shoulders, not the toes, not the toes. Head, shoulders, not the toes, not the toes. And I did it. I pointed it and sang that. And then...
But, so let me... Okay.
Go ahead.
Keep going.
Okay, I brought props.
Okay.
The Uzi corn. This is a stuffed unicorn.
Uh-huh.
And to have an Uzi, which is a very dangerous weapon.
Uh-huh. Fully automatic, correct.
Right. I do believe so. Stuffed inside of a unicorn becomes the Uzi corn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, sweat was just pouring down. I knew that, you know, and I was like... I need to have somebody wipe the sweat off my face. It's okay. I'm used to making. I command Israeli armies. You know, I make people sweat all the time.
Right.
So, and he said, and he just kept saying, like, show Yana Lee, show the children, like, look at the pretty Uzicorn, pet her and tell them guns are not scary. And I said, no, guns are very scary. This is so wrong. But he made me do it. I
sure.
mean, what's 15 people in the room and it's me.
There's certainly every bit of pressure and a very charming gentleman to say he made you do it. He was very persuasive to doing it, it certainly was uncomfortable to not do it.
If I was a liberal and it was a white guy teaching me how to making me shoot a gun,
uh-huh.
would you say that he's making me? Like,
no,
if I didn't want to do something against my will.
I can't make you do anything. I can be a strong cause for you to do something, but I don't think that I could make you do anything.
I would hope not.
Right.
I never thought I could. We're Mormons. We resist a lot of temptation.
Yeah, agency
like
crazy.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm not saying that you weren't completely trapped into this thing.
Yeah.
But to say that there's no way you could have gotten out of it, I don't think. I think that
I don't know. We can go down a big road with that one.
Yeah.
Rape. You know, a lot of
sure.
things under duress that we, you know, that people are coerced into doing,
sure.
and you know, like kidnapping.
But so you feel like it was likened under that?
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay. Just because I know myself, you know.
Right.
But I know that I, you know, I was objected the entire time. So the Uzicorn song, if you're happy and you know it, shoot your gun. Bang, bang. I mean, it's almost funny. If it wasn't guns,
right.
it's a pretty good comedy skit, but I would never, ever. No, I don't. Like, no, it's like, no, you shouldn't confuse kids. I don't want them to see a gun and think it's as harmless as a stuffed animal.
Right.
So then the next gun is the dino gun. one, and it was a dinosaur. And that one is what you call an assault weapon. That is, it's a fully auto. Mm-hmm. And so he brings out a 50 caliber.
Jeez.
And Yanali, this is the dino gun.
Yeah.
And you have to have two people. And he goes, make the sound of this. And I go, okay, well, an automatic weapon, if you hold the trigger down, goes like this. Brrr. So, like, you know, you played cops and robbers, right?
Sure.
You go, brrr. But I won't get into gun rights. The ones they want to ban only go click, click. Okay, so I made the fully automatic sound, and he's making me point the dino gun. Then he brings out the BFF gun, which is a pistol hidden inside of a bear,
mm-hmm,
for
she's
toddlers.
She's got a bear. You guys can't see it, but she's got props here, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Anyway, so, and that was the toddlers for 18 months old to point at the bad guy and pull the stringy thingy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kept saying, now bad guys are coming, trying to take your candy. You got to kill them. And I'd go, no, you don't kill people for trying to take your candy. So just like always trying to trip me up. So the grand finale, it brings out a replica of an RPG, and I go,
which, for people who don't know what an RPG is, go ahead.
Rocket propelled grenade,
right,
that you see in the movies.
So it just
shoot.
it does it follows the laws of comedy to go
right,
believable, kind of believable, not at all believable, ridiculous. Oh my gosh, this is so,
oh
this
my,
is so
it's
absurd.
So awful.
Absurd.
And,
yeah.
And so I said, why don't you show the children? It too many bad guys coming, and you got to make lots of them, and they're just coming and coming, and you have to send them to the moon. Why don't you show them how to shoot the RPG, Yanali? And I go, I don't know how to operate. Why don't you show them? No, Yanali, you have to show them. So I let's squeeze. 1, 2, 3, send the bad guys to the moon. So I was just like, okay. And by the way, they kept saying, hurry, you're going to miss your flight.
Mm-hmm.
So they did it and the whole time they're telling you have to catch a flight.
Sure.
Because I did. So I said, they had my cell phone. They had everything. You know,
sure.
So I didn't have anything. And it kind of mentions, when you don't know where your cell phone is, you kind of lose your mind.
Sure.
And I said, can I at least make sure I have my cell phone in the bag? Because they just said, you got to go now. So I got in the limousine, and the driver said, well, how was it? And I go, I think I just got conned. So
right.
I immediately started researching the internet. No story existed of a toddler killing a terrorist. I started calling them. I told them I had the feeling that they were just out to
either embarrass you,
right,
or try and discredit your name, any of those things.
Yeah,
sure.
All of that. So I fought back like a mama grizzly, and I called them, and I said, you don't have permission to use my image. I made a detailed account of everything that happens in case I need to take action.
Mm-hmm.
So interestingly enough, I wrote down what happened in my journal, and you asked me to bring my journal.
Yeah.
Since it's a Mormon show,
we
write in journals.
We do the journal thing for sure.
And so it turns out, you know, that it's good that I wrote in my journal, because I detailed, like, I don't want to live, you know, February 11th, and how conned I felt, and how awful of a horrible experience it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote about it. So it's important to, when they say write in your journals, really write in your journals, especially big things that happen like that.
Sure.
So,
could you share just a brief little bit?
Yeah.
We're going to run short on time here, but if you have a particular part,
sure,
that you'd like to share, I'd love to have you read it, and then...
I've been diarrheaing.
Diarrheaing?
No.
I've got some Pepto Bismol in my car. Let's talk about it.
I mean, diarrhea. Like, there's journaling and then diarrheaing, like a diary.
Yeah.
Like I kept a diary.
You
know,
I understand what you're saying.
I grew up keeping a diary. That was what we did. You know, the girls, it's a diary thing. Okay, sure. I even had what the cops said on Saturday night, by the way. The cops told me, there are bad people downtown. No one is religious anymore. So that was kind of interesting to hear that. So, okay. So Sunday, February 11th. Wow, what a day. Spent the day with Israeli Special Force Commandos, Iran. It was a flaky production company. Oh, I said, first of all, I had an all-you-can-eat breakfast buffet.
So I'll admit. I'm glad we've got the journal, because you had completely...
That's the one. Don't look at that part. Okay.
Yeah.
They kept telling me different times. They had a special car sent for me. Israelis were doing moves to disarm me. They taught me how to disarm when someone has a gun. These guys were super buff. Then Iran...
Did you talk about how you get a little turned on by guys with guns there? No, I didn't care. I'm just teasing. Go ahead. Keep going.
I only admit that on this show.
Yeah, okay.
So I told, you know, I started Women Against Gun Control. I shook his hand and I said, we're allies with Israel. It was a powerful moment for me. He asked what to do if a terrorist shot up a school. At the teachers, the guards, he asked why shootings happen at school. I said, because it's a gun-free zone. He asked if I would help him teach preschool kids how to shoot guns. I said, yes. I asked to talk to my producer. Okay, then the next part is, it's 3:30 a.m. I just finished detailing what happened in emails to attorneys. Long story short, the Israeli security forces brought out pistols, Uzi, full auto machine guns, and even still bunny guns, Uzi corn dino gun, bullets that look like crayons and carrots. You just put food in their mouth and push on their tummy. The gun spit out the food and the bad guys take a nap. They booked the wrong day on the flight, by the way, which is the same thing they did to Sarah Palin. So I had to charge my credit card and they said they'd reimburse me. So it's kind of like a really rude thing they do.
Sure.
They said they apologized.
Yep.
And I never got reimbursed. That's a lot of money to have to change your flight.
Sure.
Okay. So I put stupid idiots. I called Rob, the guy I met in the car. He said they canned him from going on the show. I guess they figured out he couldn't be conned because he looks like Vin Diesel.
Who is that? Who is Rob? Do you know who that individual
yeah,
is?
Yeah, his name's Rob Pincus. Look him up on the internet.
Okay.
R-O-B-P-I-N-C-U-S. He helped me. I don't know what I would have done without him.
Okay.
So for me, that was a tender mercy.
Sure.
Because he told me specifically, people do things under duress. And so I used that word. And he ended up lining me up with another guy who was conned, a sheriff's deputy in Virginia. The same thing happened. So when we figured out, we called each other and we started warning gun rights activists. So I was on the phone for hours with Steve and Rob and Jeff and Kyle. One of those is my husband, by the way. So worried and depressed, I couldn't get out of bed. Wanted to die. And then I had a friend in Hershey, Pennsylvania that came and picked me up. And so that's how I felt. You know, I wanted to die. And so journals, she took me to the airport. I told the pastor on the airplane I was sitting by, I'm so disappointed in myself. I thought I was stronger. I have strong convictions, but I cracked. They broke me and asked me to do things I've always been careful not to do. He told me that his congregation would pray for me. At the Atlanta airport, a guy met me at the gate and pushed me all the way to my gates in a wheelchair so I wouldn't miss my flight. This is the nice people.
Mm-hmm.
Then it just tells some of the same things that I talked about, how people were nice to me. And when bad things happen, the people, just by a little, you look sad, you know, smile. Can I just listen to my story?
Sure, the smallest,
or I'll even pray for you.
Can go.
I mean, sometimes it sounds trite in Mormonism. I'll pray for you.
Mm-hmm.
But when they told me that, I was like, oh my gosh, thank you.
Yeah.
And so I remember when my mom died, you know, when people die, we pray, bless those that are mourning.
Mm-hmm.
I felt great comfort when my mom died and about a week. And then that extra special help left me. It was a neat feeling when she died. Is that bad?
No.
So they really do work. You know, like our prayers really are heard. And
sure.
That's how I got duped.
Yeah. How's it been since then?
Well, my stress level, knowing that I'm going to be the laughing stock of the world, and after studying him and how he's destroyed lives, my stress level's been, you know, pretty high. But there's worse things that can happen. So you just have to laugh about things. And you have to be prepared for them. And that's why I decided to go public. And the Deseret News did that big article. And,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of killed his story before it even came out about Puppy Pistol and spoiled some of the surprise. And so every week, he destroys every week a politician has to resign or more things are happening to people that are getting punked.
Sure.
So it's therapy to come on, and free speech is so important.
Sure.
So I defended the Second Amendment. I'll defend the First Amendment. I won a free speech case. because it's important to be able to talk and to have unfettered access to everything and to free speech and the radio waves. I think it's really, you know, even the bloggers and all the mean people, mm-hmm. I think it's better that people are mean and before they start hurting people. Sure. Well, they already are. I mean, gosh, we're in this, come on. Have you seen, like, it's crazy how Americans are fighting Americans right now.
It's terrible. It's more than crazy. It's terrible.
Yeah, it
and
is.
And depressing and discouraging and heartbreaking and all of the things.
But I'm never going to stop. I'll still take people at their word that they're, you know, that I really haven't had a really bad media experience to the credit of the media. So I'm telling you as a media person and to the media out there, I've been able to help save a park and a golf course and get some fight some tax increases and, you know, some other gun rights issues and other transparency and government issues. Mm-hmm. And I will give complete credit to that, to the local media for helping me. I can Facebook all day long, and it's still just not going to be as effective as if I get local media to help me to get the word out. And so it's important that he shouldn't be allowed to get away with doing this stuff because people are already afraid to talk to the media because they don't know how they're going to cut and paste them and make them look.
Right.
So when local media works with political activists, it's a beautiful thing. Some of the things I don't even agree with the causes that they get involved with, but it's a healthy thing to have dialogue in.
Absolutely. The discussion of anything.
Right. It is.
Of all things.
Right. It is.
I have three questions that we ask everyone that step into the Culture Hall, so I'm going to ask them of you, and then I'm going to kick you right out of here.
Okay.
The first question is do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
Oh, wow. What a great question.
Right?
I do. I'm the ward organist.
Cool.
Yeah.
How long have you played for?
About 2 years.
Okay.
And I crank it up. I'm an old rocker. I'm not your typical ward organist. I switch it up every verse and
put
all the big stuff on.
Big horns and the whole thing. Yeah. I love it.
I mean, Angel Moroni, he didn't play the flute, right?
Yeah.
He played the trumpet.
He played the trumpet. I love that. That's awesome. The second question that I have is if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I loved being in the nursery. Like, it's the best, and you get snacks. It's so fun.
People say that, but I don't think there's a snack that's been created that could get me to want to be in the nursery.
Really?
Yeah. No,
oh, my gosh. Like, I didn't think that when I had young kids. But they're just fun. They look like little aliens. They're just so... Little kids are weird.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just... Like, they're so fresh, and they're so beautiful.
Okay. I'll take your word on it.
Okay.
As far as that goes, I don't believe it. The last thing is a little more serious, maybe, but what is your favorite part of your faith and how you define that or whatever you want to say that?
All right. My favorite part is I'm related to Joseph Smith, the prophet and founder of the Mormon Church.
Really? How's the relation?
Okay. My maiden name is Smith.
Okay.
And so my dad's name is Melvin.
Okay.
His dad is Elias, who was... from the third wife of Jesse Ann Smith. He was the only boy out of 13 children. Jesse Ann Smith's father was Silas. Silas is the brother of Joseph Smith's father, Joseph Smith Sr.
Okay.
So my great-great-grandpa is Joseph Smith's uncle.
Huh.
So Joseph Smith is my first cousin, like three or four times removed.
Okay.
And so I have like journal entries since my great-grandfather was raised for a while by Joseph Smith the prophet. And there's journal descriptions mm-hmm. of Joseph Smith that just tell about what an amazing man he was and how kind he was. And that if people heard his voice, that they were mollified.
Yeah.
Because it was so in. I mean, we know charming people like that.
Sure.
You're charming, Richie.
Oh, stop it.
But,
wait till you see me load a gun, Jenny. You won't be able to control
Matt.
Yourself.
Oh, I know. What am I going to do, man? I'll have to sing my favorite hymn.
Jeez. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, yeah. And Joseph Smith was just so so incredible. And the things that he did were so revolutionary. And he was very pro-gun. But I have a letter that he wrote to my great-great-grandfather, Silas, who questioned prophets.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joseph Smith, with no book learning, really, and just said, doesn't it make sense that if God's always talked to prophets, that he would talk to prophets in this modern day and age to help us to get through it? So that's my favorite part. But plus, the other favorite part is the Mormon Church. We kick apples on everything we do. You know, like everything. The hardest part for me being a Mormon is that Mormons are so awesome. Like they're just like, everybody wants to make it the celestial kingdom, right? That's our goal.
Right.
So everybody, like everything, they try to be the best at everything they do. And it's so hard. So going to church, I just look at all these incredible people and everything they do is just like first rate, first class. I don't know, like even going to Welfare Square, amazing how right. they feed that many people and the feeling that you get, you know, you can go anywhere, like you can go, Welfare Square, for example, it's an area of town that's not a choice
part of town right. necessarily.
Exactly. But as soon as you step on there, you can feel the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So the Spirit is what keeps me coming back because I get mad at stuff a lot. I mean, if I'm going to be honest, and if we're all honest, I think that I've been offended a million times, you know.
Sure.
I have a testimony that the Book of Mormon, the scripture for me since I've been in so many lawsuits, is that the destruction of the world would be caused by judges and attorneys. Who would have thought? Didn't we think it would be criminals?
Sure.
You know?
With guns?
Okay, I'll give
I'm
you
just,
that.
I'm just teasing. Well, we hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you weren't healthy enough to listen to it this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen to it next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural
Hall.
Thank you
for having me on.
You bet.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.